Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Welcome, everyone, to the property planner, buyer and professor. It's great to have you back. This is our first show for 2022 and certainly been a very interesting Christmas and New Year. Happy New Year to you, Kate. How are you?
Happy New Year, Pete. I'm well. It's so lovely to see you too. Nothing like getting up early on a Saturday morning to punch out an episode. It's been lovely. I've had a really cool break and I'm still enjoying a little bit of break here and there. So, yeah, we've done a bit of a regional Victoria road trip fiesta this time and it's been lots of fun and particularly cool not dealing with boarding passes and airport security and border crossing. I've got to say there's something to be said for travelling in your own state.
So which places have you been to in regional Victoria?
So far we've done Warrnambool and Port Arlington and Ballarat and Queenscliff, and we're about to do Phillip Island. I was meant to go to Daylesford, and then our last one is Lorne.
Very good. All right. Yeah. So you're certainly travelling the state there. Dave, how are you? Happy New Year to you too.
Yeah, Happy New Year, guys. This is our first recording in the new year, 15th of January. There's been a couple episodes go live, but, yeah, we had a great break.
Oh, pardon the pun.
Oh, yes, well.
Sorry,
my
Dave.
My three-year-old fell out of a trampoline at an Airbnb and broke her humerus off the upper elbow. So that put a bit of a dampener on 10 days in Point Lonsdale, but a couple nights in hospital for my wife and her. So that was not the best part of the holiday, that's for sure. But yeah, we had Christmas Eve in Dunkeld with family, and then drove Christmas Day to one of Sarah's brother's farms. Been to the Boxing Day test and a few things here and there. So it's been a very enjoyable break.
Today is one of our regular episodes that we do on a market update. So we're looking at the update generally for December last year. And then next year what we're doing is we're going to look back at our predictions for 2021 and also look at our predictions for 2022. So next week, well, I'll look forward to all of our episodes, but next week it'll be great or maybe not so great, because I know, Dave, we got some of our predictions wrong for last year.
With Perth, thinking, sure, we were just a year out, Pete.
Yeah, we thought Perth would be top of the charts. My God, how wrong were we there?
No, you guys thought Perth would be top of the charts.
Yeah, well, Kate thought Melbourne would be, came in second last, so
no. I do remember dropping a Hobart tip in there, though.
Oh, yes, you did very well with Hobart. Yeah. Very well, very well. Yeah, so stay tuned for that one next week. Should be a really, really insightful one, as is today. So today is, like I said before, a market update, and we're starting with changes in property prices for not only the month of December, but we're also looking for longer time periods. So, Dave, what's striking to you about the change in dwelling values according to CoreLogic data?
In December, the trend absolutely continues of the rate of market growth reducing. So the increase was the lowest it's been for a year, down to 1%, which is still a reasonable rate of growth, annualised of 12%. The trends that I've spoken to over the last couple of months continued, with Brisbane and Adelaide being the outperformers across the country, and we started to see that come through in the numbers in October, and that certainly played out now in November and December. Melbourne actually had a slightly negative month, and I think part of that is because of the huge number of listings that came off the back of the extended lockdowns of Melbourne and Sydney, which seemed like an absolute eternity ago now, don't they, guys, with the Omicron happening since then. So each year we talk about how December is a great time to buy because the number of people looking to buy tends to drop off as they get closer to the end of the year and Christmas parties happen. But this year was probably the best ever to buy, and that's reflected in the poor growth numbers. So Melbourne actually went slightly backwards at 0.1% in December, Sydney only at 0.3%. So those two capital cities were the weakest. Once again, Perth was towards the bottom at 0.4%, which, as we've discussed during the year, very confident has had a lot to do with the border closure and no one to be able to get over there. And certainly confidence in state governments, I think, now can play an impact in property values and internal migration within Australia to those cities and states.
I totally agree with you, by the way. I think December was the opportunity of all opportunities, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney, to go hard. You know, the opportunity was amplified because we just had so much backlogged stock and exhausted agents and distracted buyers. They were distracted with not just Christmas shopping like normal, but actually getting out. We got our freedoms back in tandem with a deluge of stock hitting. And to be honest, I look at 0.1%, I think it's a miracle. I really do. I would have thought in any other circumstance we'd see a noticeable difference. Like, I'm talking 5, 10% downturn with all of that opportunity. The fact that it was only minus 0.1, you know, that's nothing. It's a teeny tiny incremental difference that most people wouldn't detect. And what that means is there was still a lot of buyer uptake in the face of ridiculous, enormous stock volumes, which makes me a little bit fearful for buyer conditions in Feb, I must say, because if we had that many buyers out there willing to soak up such a deluge of stock in a time when we were all distracted and excited to get out, I don't know how hard it's going to be in the coming months, but I suspect it will be difficult. And what I will say about monthly data is it's sort of like standing on the scales every day and wondering if you're losing weight. You've actually got to give it longer than a month because so much can happen in a month, and this is a really good case in point. But if we step away from marvelling at Melbourne, I'll look at the regions and I look at the annualised growth because, you know, we've been sitting here watching all of this unfold for the last 12 months. Hobart and Brisbane, we've all marvelled about them, but I look at the regions. Combined regional is 25.9, so nearly 26% growth across the year. And when we just look at the month, the regions were still going hard even in December when they were experiencing the same buyer fatigue and distractions that the other capitals were, and they still did 2.2%. And I also stand back and look at Tasmania. I look at Canberra. If you focus on the quarterly data, Brisbane did 8.5% in one quarter. That means that buyers are having to get their head around, let's say, for $1 million price point, price movement of $85,000 across a quarter. No one would be able to predict that, and it would be hard to keep up with and accept when you're doing your comparable sales analysis and prepping for an auction result that you might have to anticipate. I mean, that's enormous. And if you break it down to just weekly, these buyers are having to put almost $1,000 a day onto their price expectation and pricing analysis. It's a scary chart. I think it's a real shock, and I do think it's a total wonder that we had any performance.
I also found that quite striking. I reckon that's 2 years in a row, Kate, that the regional areas have beaten the capital cities.
Yeah.
And that's just a reflection of the coronavirus migration from cities to countries, in particular lifestyle areas. I think you and I, Kate, contributed to an Australian Financial Review article in the last week about buying a place out in the country, but that was particularly by the sea because that's also where most of the growth seems to be happening in lifestyle areas and within driving distance of a capital city too.
Affordability is a big thing. I've asked myself for a long time, is this flash in the pan in the regions because of COVID, or is it because we're seeing genuine change and permanent change? And when you see the jobs that are being created, you know, I've enjoyed my regional fiesta, but I've been doing a lot of homework and observations on the side. We've got enormous job centres in so many of our regions around the nation, but obviously I can study the Victorian ones. And there's genuine change there, and it's not a knee-jerk reaction to COVID. I mean, consumer affairs set up in Ballarat, there's space for 1,000 employees in one building, and we saw people going there long before this virus broke out. So, yeah, I think that we're undergoing a lot of change that was on the horizon anyway. It's just that it was really, you know, exacerbated and brought forward by COVID.
Yeah, and also you've got people who are working from home, but now home is a regional centre and the work is in the city. They may only need to go in 2 or 3 days a week, if that. So, and it's much more affordable. You know, you might have been renting in Melbourne or Sydney, but you can actually afford to buy out of Melbourne or Sydney, but still keep your job. Yeah, so it's certainly been remarkable over the last 2 years what's happened to property prices in amongst the capital cities and also the regional areas. But also what's been striking is the increases in rents. Like, I can't remember in recent history rents going up so significantly. Now, no, I'm the host, but I'm just going to get in here and then I'll let you two chat. But I actually met with my property manager yesterday. We had lunch and coffee, and she said it's just remarkable the amount of landlords that are selling their properties. So the key here is the lack of supply and that their properties are being bought up by first homeowners. So it's great for the first homeowners, but there's less property for renters to buy. So people are paying, you know, they're offering more than the asking rent. There's lineups. People are making offers even before they see the property, you know, even before the first open inspection.
I think it's going to be one of the big stories of 2022 is the continuing lack of investment properties for tenants to live in and the continuing reducing percentages for vacancy rates with the lack of supply that's coming on board because developers couldn't get access or didn't have the courage, if you like, to get projects going during COVID through 2021. I think this is going to become a real problem. It's going to put more pressure on the government when it comes to the property market. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out and what sort of policies might be put in place to bring more stock online, because it's a hard thing to change overnight.
Do you guys want to know something really interesting? I obviously get inquiry from people whether they're wanting to use Cape Bacos property or whether they're asking me for my fee so they can compare or whatever, but the inquiry comes in. And over December and January, I've been popping it all in a spreadsheet. Each time I get an inquiry, it's either someone wanting a home or it's someone wanting an investment. And when they're not clear cut, it's usually someone wanting a bad investment and they want to retrofit it for their own good. But this particular period of time, I've switched back to majority investors, which I haven't had for a long, long time. But for the last 6 weeks, 80% of my inquiry has been from investors. And that's telling, because it was the other way around. It was 20-80 last year. And that says to me that investors are seeing opportunity and people are thinking about property investment. And the reason for that is probably tenfold, but the key one is that we've got tight vacancies and improving rents.
Yeah, as you say, Kate, the vacancy rates, I thought they were low this time last year, but in every capital city, they are lower than they were last year. Yeah. And when you consider that a 2% vacancy rate is considered equilibrium, you've got Sydney at 2.6%, Melbourne at 3.2%, Brisbane at 1.3%. Every other capital city is less than 1% vacancy. So it's no wonder, again, when price, whether it's the price of a property to buy or the price of property rent, price is a function of demand and supply. When supply is so constricted, rent has really only got one way to go, and that is up.
I'm sure if you remove the untenanted CBD apartments from the Melbourne and Sydney numbers, which is significantly impacted by obviously COVID, you know, foreign students, the lack of immigration, they'd be around 1% as well. So we've got record low numbers. It was one of the predictions I did get right last year was that the investors would come back, and they've steadily kept coming back over the year and just growing month on month. And this sort of feeds into the lending indicators. So November, once again, the investor percentage of loans had grown. And so they've been growing month on month since early in 2021. They were up at 32.1%. For November, they were 31.74 in September, 30.85 August, 29.11 July, and the story goes on. It's still well below when they got to those ridiculous heights of 46% in 2015, But yeah, that story continues to play out of more investors starting to swamp the market.
Yeah. Oh, look, I know the government's got a lot on its plate right now and policies are not really all that forthcoming in this space yet. It will be interesting to see what they start to peddle in the lead up to a federal election, because I think it's a really awkward spot to be in for a politician, to be balancing the need for mum and dad investors versus, you know, the opportunities being impacted for first home buyers. It's a tough one, but I look forward to seeing how it all starts to pan out.
I can't remember exactly, but the Labor shadow budget, I'm pretty sure, had a big play when it came to build to rents, and they also had some policies in there for nurses, AMBOs, and
the National Rental Affordability Scheme was all about getting those key workers being able to live reasonably close to their place of work.
Yeah,
that's right. We're going to do an episode on that and get you in the hot seat, Pete.
So, look, the next topic I wanted to chat about was listings, and I just want to emphasise again what Kate said before. You know, a month in property is not a long time. In other words, looking just part of the picture is not the whole picture. So we've got, I mean, I know you can't see it because you're only listening to us, but we've got two graphs in front of us as far as listings are concerned. One is new listings and the other one is total listings. And when you look at new listings, when you compare it to the last few years, we've had more new listings in December than we've had for the last few years. And you think, oh my God, there's going to be an oversupply, property prices will drop. But when you look at the graph next to it, which shows total listings, the total amount of properties for sale is still well below the last few years. So even though there are lots of new properties coming onto the market, when you look at the whole picture, the big picture, there is still a limited supply. And this is what I know we're going to talk about it more next week. But this is, I think, why, one of the reasons why property prices will still continue to go up, not as much as 2021. And it's mainly due to the lack of supply. There's just not that much property available to buy. What do you reckon, Kate?
I totally agree with you, except I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think we will have similar growth, if not more, than 2021.
Really? Oh, I can't wait till next week when you give us more reasoning for that. You reckon we're going to have an even better year than 2021? Okay.
I do. Short of a really difficult policy change or introduction of tightening credit, and I'm talking about a serious tightening of credit, not playing a little bit with the buffering rate, but short of those events or any other crazy related outbreak and lockdown events, I'm forecasting that we'll have a very, very strong year.
So you're talking circa 20% growth ballpark.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is I look at what has happened in the face of international borders being closed and a lot of people clamping down or being concerned about jobs, and we've still had phenomenal growth. And to your point, Pete, the listing activity, we've got a lot of people are looking to upgrade or do something because the cost of building and changing has become a real issue as well. And we are seeing, we haven't got employment worries like we're all fearing, and we are seeing some wages growth, but I think that confidence in the market and low interest rates and the combination of those other things I've mentioned are going to continue to fuel this market.
Right. Dave, what do you reckon?
Oh, look, that wouldn't be my prediction, but I think the canary in the coal mines is opening up international borders and bringing people back into Australia at a high rate. If rates don't increase, but, you know, the opposite of that, obviously the trend is gradually coming down. Well, look, I've got some numbers here where some of the fixed rates are 1% higher now than they were around the middle of last year. So the three-year fixed owner-occupied P&I with CBA is now 0.91% above where it was in May. The four-year is 1.1% above. The three-year fixed is 1.15% above. I wouldn't be so buoyant with what's going to happen. I'd sit more in the 5 to 10% range, but it's plausible, that's for sure. Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Well, we'll talk more about that next week. And I mean, I tend to agree with you, Dave, but the one reason it might skyrocket is people would think that with so few listings, there's so few sales. But when you look at the dwelling sales nationally, the time chart that we've got in front of us only goes back 20 years. So it's certainly more sales we've had than the last 20 years. So if you've got a limited supply and lots of properties are selling and that rate continues, then that limited supply story is just going to get worse and worse. And so if you've got even less and less properties for people to buy, then you can assume that property prices will continue to go higher. But we need to wait and see what happens there. But that's just phenomenal, that graph that shows, you know, the 10-year average is just below 500,000 sales per year. And at the moment, it's 650,000 sales per year, which is the greatest in at least 20 years, probably more.
That's the record.
That is the absolute record. Okay.
Yeah, because 2003 was the record, and we spoke about that a bit.
That's right. Yeah.
Because it correlated with one of the great years of property growth. And counterintuitively, there was the most sales ever that year, but it's a sign of obviously a strong market.
Really strong demand.
Huge demand.
Confidence. I know that we've got an index coming up that we'll touch on that might disagree with that, but these numbers are enormous. And to your point, Pete, the two charts prior to that, the CoreLogic ones that show new listings versus all listings, new listings through the roof, all listings, they're almost half of the standard average over the last few years. And what that says is buyers are scrambling and buying all the crap that they were rejecting a couple of years ago. So all of those 180-day plus listings, old listings, they're slowly getting taken up. And there's only a finite number of all of that old stuff sitting around. And when it gets really lean, I think that's when we're going to see buyers really pushing each other. Because right now you can still buy something for a reasonable price if it's a horrible thing that's been sitting around for the last couple of years and no one's wanted it. You just pay, you know, the vendor's expected price tag. I'm not suggesting people should do this, by the way, but you haven't really got much competition. So that's why these awful low-hanging pieces of fruit are being taken up. But when they've all just about been collected, we'll start to see buyers competing for all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, certainly a very interesting year, 2022, with the lack of supply, not just of rental property, but also property for people to buy to live in.
Yeah.
You're just looking perfectly into the crystal ball and already seen what was going to happen.
Yeah, here it is. But the on-off switch doesn't work. I can't get it to work, mate. It's blank.
Something we did miss, and I try a bit, sometimes I fail at this, to not talk too much about Melbourne on this show, but it's because it's my home state and I'm all over it. When we look back at the rents, Melbourne's unit market was the basket case of 2020, and we started to see a slow and painful recovery through 21. And what's really interesting now is the annualised change in rent, so it's a rolling 12-month average, it shows that Melbourne units are up with a net 3% across the board, which is pretty impressive when we think about how we've got to that figure from minus 13. It means that we've had a really rapid recovery that's jetted us into, well and truly, into positive territory over the last couple of months. And Pete, I've been trying to work out exactly what's going on there. And I think I agree, after polling a lot of agents, I agree with you that owner-occupiers have been buying the units that have been vacant. I think that's the main reason here, because we haven't had an enormous uptake of horrible one-bedroom units in the CBD by tenants because we haven't had enough. But it is a very interesting chart. And if at this point in time Melbourne's showing that kind of change in inner city rents, that's quite incredible.
And the other thing we haven't talked about, which is I think very important, is the opening of the gates to international students, because not only are they going to take up properties, but it was recently announced that there won't be that limit on foreign students and how many hours they work, because we've got such a shortage of labour at the moment because there are so many people with COVID, they can't go to work. So the influx of foreign students is certainly going to improve the vacancy rates of Melbourne and Sydney, because there'll be increased demand, and you will see that, you know, rents will continue to increase even in that CBD apartment market, which has been quite dampened over the last 2 years or so. Dave's our big picture man on this show. And I know he loves consumer sentiment, in particular time to buy a dwelling, Dave. So what do Australians think about now being a good time to buy a dwelling?
That's hovered pretty consistently in the 80s to high 90s over the last 5 months, and it's dropped to its lowest point at 81.9. So they don't think it's a good time to buy a dwelling. The index peaked in November 2020, so it was definitely a harbinger for what was going to happen to the property market in 2021. And as it's gradually declined, I think, you know, that's certainly, again, been a forebearer for what's happened with the property rate of growth declining too. So there's definitely some negative sentiment around property prices. As we've discussed, that doesn't mean that property growth drops off a cliff. It can mean that people scurry to get into property faster. But I do think the general trend of this index has reflected that of the trend of the property market.
I think when we have a look at this in tandem with the House Price Expectations Index, that's the true story. People are
saying
that's
one that I was looking at too.
Yeah, it's a bad time to buy a house because prices are still soaring. That's what people are thinking, and it is a difficult one because how long do you bury your head in the sand and hope that things tumble before you think, oh my gosh, I've got to buy before this is outside of my reach?
Just to clarify with our listeners, so the consumer sentiment index we're looking at is brought out by Westpac and the Melbourne Institute. So the number 100 means there's just as many people that are negative about that particular issue as there are positive. So Dave mentioned time to buy a dwelling is 81.9. Below 100, so there are more people that are negative. They don't think it's a good time to buy. But when we look at the house price expectation index, that's 150. So lots and lots of people think that property prices will continue to go up. So another reason why Kate's prediction for 2022 could be correct.
Well, because I'm in the majority of that cohort.
Well, last year it was 143, and the year before, December 19, it was 140. And that trend has shown to be correct because property prices certainly increased from 19 to 20 and again from 20 to 21. And there has been some academic papers written about, you know, the link between people's expectations of property price rises and the actual property price rise. If enough people expect property prices to rise, they will. It's a bit like anything else. If you expect something to increase in price, then you are more likely to go out and buy it, create more demand. Supply, in particular in property, is quite inelastic. It's quite fixed, and therefore price goes up. So very interesting chart, that one.
Mm. Yes, Dave. What we should look at with the house price expectation index is the patch where it went backwards during those 6 months of COVID to see if there is a direct correlation.
Yeah, excellent. All right. Can we ask Anne-Marie to find that for us, or we can find that on the net, can we?
Well, she listens to every one of these episodes as part of writing some of the marketing post-its. So, Anne-Marie, Peter's just asked you to do that.
If you wouldn't mind, Anne-Marie, if that's too hard, just I'll find the link on the net. It would be very interesting to see if that correlates. So it would have been like March, April, May, June of 2020 to see if property price. And I reckon it did because even the big boys, you know, the banks and some of the property experts said the property prices were going to drop 15, 20%. I mean, they never did. Yeah. They did drop a little bit, but certainly not by that much.
And prior to the last election would be good to see as well.
Yeah, because we got a federal election coming up sometime
probably
before
in May.
Yeah. All right. Now, Dave, I know you touched on the lending indicators, and I found that quite remarkable because last night I was listening to the news and it was a 6.3% monthly increase. That is just phenomenal. I don't know if that is a record. And that's everyone. Owner-occupiers were 7.6% increase.
Yeah.
No wonder the brokers were exhausted.
Look, a lot of the economists were surprised by that number, but I'm not really, and I think there were two key factors that drove that. Two, Melbourne and Sydney lockdowns finishing. The other reason was the APRA move to tighten lending. We talked about it at the time. We saw it in our businesses. There was a real flurry of people wanting to buy before their borrowing capacity got impacted. So I think those two factors are a big cause, Asian, for the highest rate of lending growth since January last year. So I don't know if that'll be a trend that'll continue. Yeah,
I'm predicting it will. It's one of my, I think it's one of the drivers to sentiment. People aren't as fearful about inability to make repayments as they are about borrowing capacity being hampered.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, it'll be very interesting to see next month's and to see if it drops it significantly. It just shows that that particular month was extraordinary because, as you say, that we had two major capital cities coming out of lockdown and there were going to be some changes to lending that people wanted to try and get in before it actually did change. The last topic for discussion as far as our market update is concerned is unemployment. Dave, what can you tell us?
With the latest ABS stats published 16th of December, so they lag a little bit, unemployment rate decreased back to 4.6 in line with September after increasing to 5.2%, which is basically because of the lockdowns in Melbourne and Sydney. So, you know, that's a very good number and we expect that unemployment number to keep coming down. This feeds into that bigger picture discussion of, is inflation transitory or is it going to last? Are we going to see the level of inflation that's happening in the US? So some of the data that's just come out in the US in the last 7 days, they've actually down underneath 4% unemployment. So they've actually just come down to 3.9%. Wage growth destroyed expectations at 4.7% in the US when the consensus was 4.2%. So the Fed Reserve's target is 2%. That's significantly above the Fed's target. And core inflation was 5.5%, which is the highest since 1991. One of the big risks to the markets, and that's property and share markets for 2022, is the US Fed raising rates.
But why do you think, Dave, inflation is so high in the US?
We discussed this at in a previous episode. I need my notes in front of me.
I'll give you my opinion.
There's a few factors.
I reckon it's the supply. Even if we had just the same amount of people that wanted to buy, let's say, groceries, if there are less groceries on the shelves, which is exactly what we are experiencing in Australia, just look at those rapid antigen tests, then price is going to go up. It's not like lots of us want to buy lots more, even if it's the same amount of people that want to buy the same amount of stuff. There's just less of it because there are less people at work producing stuff. There are less people being able to deliver the stuff to our outlets. So less supply, even if demand is the same, prices will go up. I reckon this inflation thing is not going to be long term. It's just until the supply chain settles. Sorry, Kate, you wanted to say something?
Oh, it was a good example, Pete. Look at bananas. Remember when we had the crops all wiped out?
The cyclone, yeah.
Seriously, we're paying like $3 a banana.
Yeah, well, look, supply chains are certainly something I've been talking about for a few months. I think that's a key part of it. I think record low interest rates still play a role and the Fed's predicting they'll increase rates 3 to 4 times. And when in 2022, or I don't know whether the Fed is saying that or many of the economists, but either way, if that was to happen, that's going to have a big impact on share prices because the cost of borrowing is going to go up significantly, which is going to change the multiples on share prices. And it will also, if any of that flows through to Australia, that could have an impact on the property market here. In terms of like the NASDAQ, which is the tech-centric part of the US property market, that's dropped 8% since November with the fear of rates rising, and Bitcoin, which is a bit of a proxy as well for equity markets, has gone under 40,000 after hitting 52,000 in December. So the Commonwealth Bank is getting in ahead of the curve, and they've just purchased the single largest bond trade ever of $4 billion while the cost of funding is lower. So, you know, there's little sort of signals there that could have an impact on markets.
Yeah, watch this space and more importantly, listen to this space because in a very insightful session today, but next week when we talk about 2021 and 2022, I think that's certainly one not to be missed by our listeners. But listeners, please don't go yet because we've got Kate and Dave's gold nuggets.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
I think when it comes to data, being informed is so valuable for anyone who is watching the market or participating in the property market. But always remember that monthly data is influenced by all kinds of things, and particularly when we've got holiday seasons and Christmas is a case in point. So always keep an eye on the quarterly and the annualised data. Don't just focus on month by month.
Excellent point. Dave, your gold nugget.
Well, I'll just agree with that. The trend is your friend. So the monthly data, look at it in the bigger picture of the trend, and whether it's a three-month trend, six-month, 12-month, and then you start to get a broader perspective.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, you two. Look forward to being with you again next week when we talk about 2021 and 2022. So bye for now. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about how to put your best foot forward in this market, take and listen to episodes 9, Why Your Mortgage Strategy is More Important Than Your Interest Rate, episode 12, Property Cycle Management, Why Now is Always the Best Time to Buy if it suits your personal economy and you have a long-term property plan, episode 52, Dissecting 10 Years of CoreLogic Data, Capital Cities and Regional Areas, episode 78, Setting Yourself Up to Purchase with Confidence and Why Getting Your Pre-Approval in Place is More Critical Than Ever, and also episode 94, The Winner's Curse and How to Avoid It.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bakos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.